Militants from the Al-Qaeda-linked Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant have taken over Iraq's northern province of Nineveh. Iraq's Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki has asked the parliament to declare a state of emergency. He's also offered to arm citizens who volunteer to fight. An offshoot of Al-Qaeda, the ISIL emerged in Iraq in 2013 and has become one of the most notorious militant groups fighting government forces in Syria. Maliki has accused Saudi Arabia of supporting the militants. So what's behind the rise of this militancy and what's the best way to tackle it? I'm Homa Lizgi and you're watching The Debate.
The serious security situation demands urgent emergency procedures to protect national security and our citizens. The situation requires the Prime Minister and the Presidency of the Republic to submit an urgent request to Parliament to uphold its responsibility and announce a state of emergency. The government has formed a special crisis cell to follow up the process of equipping and arming the population.
Iraqi Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki, speaking after the terrorist group known as the Islamic State of Iraq and the Levant, or the ISIL, captured Nineveh province and its provincial capital, Mosul. Maliki, who was visibly angry over the situation in Nineveh, also urged the UN, EU and the Arab League to help his country fight the terrorists. Meanwhile, a video posted on the internet shows what appear to be ISIL militants opening fire on people fleeing Mosul. The ISIL militants operating in Iraq are mostly foreign insurgents who are receiving money and weapons from outside Iraq. The main culprits, according to Iraqi officials, are Saudi Arabia and Qatar. In his comments on the capture of Nineveh by the ISIL, Maliki called on the foreign sponsors of terrorists to stop supporting them. He repeatedly slammed Saudi Arabia and Qatar, blaming them for the wave of terrorist attacks in Iraq. Nineveh fell into the hands of the insurgents after the Iraqi government forces fled the area in the face of advancing militants. The Iraqi parliament speaker, Osama Nejafi, has criticized the army over its withdrawal from Mosul and the surrounding areas. Nejafi said the terrorists pose a threat to the entire region.
The presence of these terrorist groups in Nineveh, the second biggest region in Iraq, is not only a threat to Iraqi security and unity, but it threatens the whole Middle East and neighboring countries. Cooperation is needed, and all dissent should be disregarded, because Iraq is facing an external invasion.
The ISIL is responsible for a deadly campaign of terror, including car bombings across Iraq, which has killed thousands of people this year alone.
You're watching The Debate. Joining me now live from London is political commentator Mr. Sukant Chandan, and with us live from the US in Wilmington, Iraqi justice and political activist Dalia Wasfi. Thank you very much, both of you, for being with us here on The Debate. My first question to Ms. Wasfi in Wilmington. Let's begin with the latest news, Ms. Wasfi. Five areas of Kirkuk now captured by the militants, as well as several areas in Saladin, and as was said there in that report, Mosul and the surrounding Nineveh province. And we know that especially that area is a major export route for Iraqi oil, a gateway to Syria as well. And that brings us to the question, what are the militants' plans? Will they expand their presence in the country as far as they can?
I don't think it's clear yet exactly what is happening in the northern province. And the reason for that is that we have heard the same stories about ISIL in Anbar province in the western part of the country. And these reports have consistently been false. It is the tribal leaders of that region who have maintained control of their own cities, their own neighborhoods. But the government of Nouri al-Maliki has targeted Fallujah Fallujah and Ramadi with aggressive mortaring and helicopter gunships and bombings. And as of yesterday, the number of people killed and wounded is 1,631 wounded and 430 killed. As long as the government continues to target indiscriminately, the body count will rise. So we know that that story of foreign fighters is not true in the West. I think it remains to be seen what is happening exactly in the North and who exactly benefits from it.
Well, let's bring in Mr. Sukhan Chandon on this as well. Mr. Chandon, first of all, let's see if you agree with that analysis of events that we're not having yet a clear picture of actually what's happening in Iraq. What can you tell us?
Peace and good evening, sister, and to all the viewers, and greetings to Sister Dahlia, whose work against especially the aggression in Iraq I've been following for over a decade. And it's a privilege to be here to be engaged in a discussion and conversation over this matter. I think this is a continuation of the March of the Arab Spring, and there is a direct connection between the explosion of the Arab Spring and the destruction, the depravity and the division we've been seeing in the region, because what the Arab Spring did was to unleash sectarian forces, divisive forces, and also forces which had no strategical plan in bettering the countries impacted. It unleashed it, and the most traumatic things that developed were particularly in Libya and then Syria and also in Yemen. And in these countries, the death squads, and I'll develop the analysis about the nature of the death squads. Basically, it's an upgrade. It's a 2.0 death squad formation by the West to that which they had in the so-called Latin American arena in the 70s and 80s. So this has unleashed it. And what we're seeing in northern Iraq is very clearly part of the fallout from the Western manipulated and orchestrated, directed war in Syria. And really what it is also is the West pushing back against the strategic advances of the resistance formations in Syria against the death squads there. So it's to open up some, to kind of loosen the pressure in Syria, open up some territory in Iraq, and to continue developing this death squad divisive, depraved strategy, which is impacting and tearing apart the so-called Muslim world. Mm.
Ms. Wasfi, you know, right now the news that we're getting was Mr. Najafi, the parliament speaker in Iraq, saying this is an external invasion. And we know Maliki himself has clearly accused Saudi Arabia of supporting, financing and equipping these groups. What can you tell us about the external factors involved here?
Well, if to understand what's happening today, as Sukhan so eloquently said, you have to look back to the beginning of the latest crisis in this part of the world, and you look back to the U.S. invasion. Today, the U.S. is arming so-called Syrian rebels who are fighting against the established government of Bashar al-Assad. So most likely, the weapons that are being used against the people of Mosul and against the people of Fallujah, Ramadi, and the rest in Anbar province, these are coming from the United States, either directly or indirectly. If we look at a map also, you know, Iraq and Syria are neighboring countries, but it's not that easy to get from Syria to the city of Mosul. There's a lot of desert to be traversed in there, and there has to be a supply chain. So somebody's getting a lot of help to get to Mosul and then commit these acts there. So the external force that I'm concerned about, as Sukhan mentioned, is the West, and in particular, the United States government.
Right. Well, Mr. Chandon, you know, a lot has been said about the role of the government as well. Some people are saying that Mr. Maliki was in fault in the way that he treated, for instance, the protests that started in Anbar province. This triggered a lot of what's been happening. And they're also saying that the Iraqi army was not ready for this kind of onslaught. What do you think about that?
Well, sister, God help anyone who is in charge of this colonial construct, which is called Iraq. And I don't mean that to insult Iraqi or the Iraqi nation, but the fact is this is a British construct. It was constructed in such a manner that the divisions that cut across ethnic, religious and faith lines would have the base ingredients for ongoing intergenerational trauma and division. And Iraq is a classic case of Western divide and ruin and divide and rule strategy working, unfortunately and tragically for the Iraqi people and neighboring people, working extremely well. You know, there's been openings in Iraq whereby the two main forces of the Iraqi people, that's the Shia and Sunni. And remember, we'd never used this rhetoric before 2003, when, hey presto, this very strange person, Zarqawi, took over the death squads in Iraq. But we've had certain openings whereby the two communities did actually de facto fight together against the US occupation. Pro-Iranian forces, Shia political forces, and also so-called Sunni. I hate to use this sectarian language, but you just forgive me, I hope you understand. That certain Sunni revolutionary forces as well were de facto in shooting in the same direction, i.e. against the common enemy, which was Britain, the United States, in Iraq. And then with the siege of Fallujah by the US Army, and also the siege of Najaf, there were openings whereby the two communities come together. Now, Maliki is in an awful position, and there's a lot of corruption. It's not like Syria, where the Syrian people could see and be proud of and raise their morale in terms of the beautiful society that Syria was, with all its problems pre-